All right, welcome everyone to another deep dive. Today we're taking a look at something a little different. We got this really interesting request from a listener to dig into this old legal case from 1881. It's called Brown v. Memphis and Charleston Railroad Co.
Yeah, this one's definitely a bit of a hidden gem. I mean, when you first hear 1881 court case, you might not think it's going to be super relevant to like modern law students, but trust me, this one gets right to the heart of some really key issues about individual rights, public spaces, and how businesses can or can't exercise their authority.
Exactly. And, you know, the Lex Plug podcast even highlighted it in some of their materials aimed at law students. So there's definitely something here that's worth unpacking for sure. And the core of this case for me is really this question. Can a business actually restrict your access based on who they think you are, or can they only do it based on how you're actually behaving right there in that moment? Like, what's the line?
It's a great question. It really gets at how we balance individual rights with like the needs of businesses to operate, and also this whole idea of discrimination. Like, can you be denied a service based on your reputation, even if you're not doing anything wrong at the time?
Right, right. So like, how much power do businesses have to judge our character and then use those judgments to say, nope, you're not allowed here? So to set the stage for our listeners, let's talk about the facts of this case. So it's 1881, and we have this Black woman, actually, the records don't even name her, which is kind of interesting in itself, and she's trying to ride in the ladies' car of a train. Now, I know that sounds like something out of a history book, but back then that was a thing. And the Memphis and Charleston Railroad Company, they wouldn't let her ride in that designated car. So she sues them, and she actually wins. The court awards her $3,000. I mean, that was a lot of money back then, so you know they were serious. But what we're really digging into today is the railroad's appeal for a new trial. They didn't just accept that judgment. Right. And this is where things get really juicy, legally speaking. So their argument, the railroad's argument, wasn't that she was causing a disturbance on the train that day. It wasn't that her behavior was inappropriate. Instead, they focused on her alleged reputation.
Oh, interesting. So what were they saying about her?
Well, according to them, she was known as a courtesan, and they claimed she had this reputation for profane language and vulgar conduct. Basically, they were trying to paint a picture of someone who was immoral and therefore unfit to ride in the ladies' car.
So just to be super clear for our listeners, she was reportedly dressed appropriately, acting totally fine that day on the train, and yet they still kicked her out. And their only justification was, well, we heard she's not a very nice person.
It's kind of mind-blowing, right? Like, what if you just had a disagreement with someone and they decided to spread rumors about you? Could they then use that to get you barred from places? That seems like it opens the door to a whole lot of potential for abuse. So what did the court have to say about that? Did they think that was a legitimate reason to deny someone service? That's the million-dollar question here, and is why this case is still so relevant today. The court had to decide, okay, can a common carrier, and in legal terms, that basically means a business that provides transportation to the public, can they kick someone out just because of their reputation, even if they're not doing anything wrong at the time?
That's a tough one. Yeah. So what did they decide?
Well, the railroad, as part of their appeal, they even tried to bring in a new witness to support their claims about this woman's reputation. They were really trying to make this case about her character. But the court ultimately sided against the railroad. They basically said, nope, you can't do that. They upheld the original judgment in favor of the woman.
Wow, okay. So they weren't buying the whole bad reputation argument. I'm curious, what was their legal reasoning? Like, what principles did they base their decision on that our law student listeners should really pay attention to?
So the court laid out some pretty clear guidelines here. They basically said that common carriers, because they're providing a public service, have a duty to transport all passengers who are, you know, dressed appropriately and behaving themselves. They actually use the word genteelly, which I think is kind of funny now, but you get the idea.
Yeah, I can just picture some stuffy old judge using that word. But okay, so they have to serve everyone who's not causing a problem. But I'm guessing there were some exceptions to that rule, right?
Right. They did acknowledge that there are certain situations where it would be okay for a common carrier to exclude someone.
Okay, so what were those exceptions? Like, when could they actually say, sorry, you can't ride?
Well, the first one's pretty obvious. If a passenger is being disruptive or offensive, you know, like if they're drunk and disorderly or threatening other passengers, then yeah, the carrier can absolutely step in and remove them. I mean, they have a responsibility to ensure the safety and comfort of everyone else.
Right. Totally makes sense. What was the other exception?
This one's a bit more nuanced. They said that exclusion could be justified if someone has a really, really bad reputation for a specific vice. and this is important, a specific vice that's likely to cause immediate harm or annoyance to others, or even to the carrier's business itself. They actually gave the example of a known pickpocket. Like if someone has a reputation for stealing and they get on a crowded train, the carrier might have grounds to exclude them based on that specific threat.
Okay, so it's not just any bad reputation. It has to be something very specific and something that poses a clear and present danger, so to speak. So in this case, the railroad was basically saying, well, she's known for being immoral, so she can't ride with the ladies. But the court was essentially saying, that's not specific enough. Being immoral, in a general sense, doesn't necessarily mean she's going to cause a problem on the train.
Right. And that's a really crucial point. The courts specifically rejected the idea of excluding someone just based on their general moral reputation. Like, they weren't saying that anyone who'd ever made a bad choice could be barred from public transportation. They were drawing a line. And Judge Hammond, who wrote the opinion in this case, he actually had some pretty strong words about this. He basically said that if they allowed this kind of exclusion based on vague notions of morality, it would be like putting every woman's character on trial before every single railroad conductor.
Yeah, that's a powerful image. You can just imagine the potential for abuse there. It would be completely subjective. One conductor might think someone is dressed inappropriately, and another conductor might not even bat an eye. And who gets to decide what's moral anyway?
Exactly. And the court was really concerned about giving that much power to individual employees. They were trying to create some clear legal boundaries and say, look, you can't just discriminate against people based on your personal opinions.
Right. I mean, businesses can definitely set rules for their customers, but those rules have to be reasonable and they can't be discriminatory. So barring someone from a train just because you don't like their past without any evidence that they're actually going to cause a problem, that's not okay.
And that's where this idea of reasonable regulation comes in. Mm-hmm. The court was basically saying, look, railroads, you can have rules, of course, but they have to be reasonable. Mm-hmm. And excluding someone based on some vague idea of bad character, that's not reasonable. It's like if you're running a library, you can have a rule that says no loud talking, because that makes sense. It's about creating a certain environment. But you can't have a rule that says no people who like to read romance novels.
Yeah.
That's just arbitrary and unfair.
Yeah, that's a great analogy. So the court is saying common carriers, you have a responsibility to serve the public. And that means treating people fairly and not making judgments based on rumors or stereotypes.
And it's not like they were saying that anyone with any past mistake could just ride the train no matter what. It was really about the clear and present danger idea. Like with the pickpocket example, there's a very specific threat there. But just saying someone has a bad reputation without any details, that's not enough. It's too vague and open to interpretation.
It's all about drawing that line between what's justifiable and what's discriminatory.
Right. And the court was saying, we need to err on the side of protecting individual rights here. Now, one thing that really struck me about this case was the amount of money the court awarded. $3,000 back in 1881 was a serious chunk of change. And these weren't just like ordinary damages, they were punitive damages.
Yeah, let's talk about that. What are punitive damages and why did the court feel they were warranted in this case?
So punitive damages are basically meant to punish the defendant for particularly egregious conduct. It's not just about compensating the victim for their losses, it's about sending a message. And in this case, the court awarded punitive damages even though there was no proof that the conductor was acting out of malice. Like maybe he was just following company policy, but the court was still saying, nope, this isn't okay.
So they were really trying to make a statement here, weren't they?
Absolutely. And what that statement was basically this. Common carriers, you are providing a public service, and you have a heightened responsibility to serve all members of the public without discrimination. So if you implement unreasonable regulations, like barring someone based on vague rumors, there will be consequences.
So it was a message not just to that one conductor, but to the entire railroad company and really to any business that provides a public service. They were saying you can't hide behind your policies if those policies are discriminatory. It was a powerful message, especially for that time period. I mean, we're talking about post-Civil War America when things were really in flux and social norms were being challenged left and right.
Right. And even though this case doesn't explicitly mention race, you can't ignore the context. I mean, the fact that a black woman was trying to ride in the ladies' car at all, and then that she actually sued and won, it really speaks volumes about the changing social landscape.
And that underlying principle, the idea that you should be judged based on your actual conduct, not on your reputation or on some stereotype that feels so relevant even today, doesn't it? I mean, think about all the discussions we're having now about discrimination and bias and access.
Absolutely. This case raises some really important questions that are still with us today. Like, what are the legitimate grounds for restricting someone's access to public spaces and services?
Yeah.
And how much weight should we give to someone's past when evaluating their present character?
Yeah, it really makes you think. And I love how Judge Hammond phrased it. He said that allowing exclusion based on general moral reputation would put every woman's private character on trial before every railroad conductor. It's like, who gets to be the judge of our morality? And how do we prevent those judgments from being used to unfairly restrict our access to the things we need and want?
That's a slippery slope for sure. And this case reminds us that we need to be careful about how we use judgments about character to make decisions about access and inclusion.
Yeah, it's a reminder that fairness and justice are ongoing projects, and we have to constantly be vigilant about protecting individual rights, especially in public spaces. And for our law student listeners, this case really highlights the distinction between exclusion based on actual behavior, like being disruptive, versus exclusion based on stereotypes or just general disapproval. That distinction is key, and it comes up all the time in legal reasoning.
Exactly. Brown v. Memphis and Charleston Railroad Co.
Yeah.
Might be an old case, but it speaks to some very fundamental legal and societal issues that are still relevant today. It's a reminder that we need to be clear about what our values are and how we translate those values into law and policy.
Absolutely. So to sum it all up for our listeners, what this case really boils down to is this. If you're running a business that serves the public, you can't just arbitrarily exclude people based on assumptions about their character. You have to have a legitimate reason, and that reason has to be grounded in observable behavior, not just in what you think you know about someone. It's about fairness, it's about due process, and it's about protecting individual rights in the face of potentially discriminatory practices.
And for those of you studying law, I think what's really interesting here is how this case grapples with that tension between the operational needs of business and the fundamental rights of individuals. And that's a tension that's still very much alive today.
Totally. So here's a final thought for you to chew on. How does this idea of focusing on observable behavior rather than general reputation, how does that continue to shape our understanding of fairness and access in the 21st century? I mean, think about all the different spaces and services that are considered public today. What are the modern day equivalents of that lady's car on the train? And how are we still grappling with these same questions about who belongs, who gets access, and who gets to decide?
Those are great questions, and they're ones that I think we'll continue to be wrestling with for a long time to come. And Brown v. Memphis and Charleston Railroad Code gives us a really valuable framework for thinking about these issues, even though it's over 140 years old.
Food for thought. Well, that was a fascinating deep dive. Thanks for joining us, everyone.